I'm not interested in opera at all. Normally, I don't listen to music. My Turandot is going to be different.
This is our director, Ai Weiwei.
He's been called the most powerful figure in contemporary art.
I know Ai Weiwei as a free speech magnet, as a freedom fighter.
This is a perfect story about China.
China is not a free country.
Poche ore fa il governo ha definito delle regole alle quali ovviamente noi non possiamo non sottostare, quindi dobbiamo chiudere il teatro fino alla fine di marzo. Non si possono fare più le prove.
Always say the work is like my home. So it's like suddenly you build the home, it collapsed. Why I will we have to do a Turandot? You know, what is my interpretation of the show?
No one has ever done a Turandot that's about the world today as it is, so directly. Every detail, every costume, every prop has been designed new. Nothing is the way it ever usually looks.
Well, I always Turandot, of course, related his work and his life. The concept of his artwork is definitely related to Turandot.
I think the art compete with reality, and art will give the last words.
The renowned artist and activist Ai Weiwei has used sculpture, photography, documentaries, and large-scale installations to challenge authoritarian power for decades. But his project at the Rome Opera House, directing Puccini's final opera, Turandot, may be his most powerful fusion of art and politics yet. Puccini's original is a fairy tale set in ancient China about a princess whose riddle games costs failed suitors their lives. But Ai Weiwei transformed this story into a stark reflection of the present, weaving in footage of refugee crises, COVID hospitals, and the Ukraine war, a production that became an urgent act of resistance for its Ukrainian conductor and cast. The opera and documentary is a living document of our turbulent times, embodying Ai Weiwei's belief that everything is art, everything is politics. The recording we just heard are clips from the new documentary, Ai Weiwei's Turandot, which goes behind the curtain to capture the artistic struggle and emotional weight of making this work, a process that began with one vision and was fundamentally changed by a global pandemic and major war. My guest is the documentary's director, Maxime Derevyanko. He grew up in a family with deep ties to the Rome Opera House, and he offers a deeply personal, intimate look at how Ai Weiwei's art competes with reality, but art will have the last word. Maxime Derevyanko, welcome to The Creative Process.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Thank you very much for having me.
So your documentary, which I loved, it's a work of art in itself, documenting the creation of a work of art. You really have this personal tie. We'll go a bit into your personal history, but you know the Rome Opera House very well. You're not just coming in on a commission to do one documentary. You have a long history of telling their stories and knowing it from your various family members who have performed there. So this is truly behind the scenes. And your documentary does open with an Ai Weiwei quote, as I mentioned, everything is art, everything is politics. How did you set out to illustrate this statement? Because it seemed like as production progressed, the world around the art grew more and more politically charged.
Yeah, so actually the quote came in a second moment, maybe just a little bit before starting editing. So when we decided to do a documentary to follow Ai Weiwei, we knew it wouldn't be just a simple opera. We knew he would bring his own very special and original vision, and because he's not an opera director, so From his point of view, it's a challenge, but from another point of view, probably it's an enrichment for the opera audience because he doesn't follow the rules of opera. And of course, once you decide to do a documentary about Ai Weiwei, it's in his DNA to be political. So once I started to follow him, basically the political issues, the political topics and everything came inside of the documentary by themselves. My question I wanted to make a documentary about what is art and why do we need it? I was asking myself this since a long time. I was working at the Rome Opera House since 2015 as a filmmaker, doing commercials mainly for them, so trailers for each production. But every time I was there, my question was, why this is happening? I mean, why there are people believing in a story of love, of other people just singing for 2 hours with costumes and music, but you go to the theater and you believe in this illusion. If you take it out from the theater, and I don't know, if you see people expressing that way in the streets, you would think that's ridiculous. You know, expressing love or another concept through singing, you will just talk about it. But in that environment, you believe in it. And so my question was, why? Why do we need it? Why we do it in that way? And of course, then together with Michele Gogo, Silvia Pelati and Gianni Fallarino, the writers, we got through the 2020 season of the Opera House. We saw Ai Weiwei was coming and I said, okay, this would be an incredible production where we could maybe try to find an answer to those questions. So while I was trying to search for answers for these questions, of course, inside arrived the topics that Ai Weiwei brings with him all the time. So refugees, political issues, dictatorship, totalitarianism, freedom of speech, all of this. And everything basically starting from just one question that Puccini made for us, that is, what is love, basically? So we are all trying to answer to this question, and probably we will keep answering in the next, million of years, because it will change all the time.
Yeah, that's an eternal question. I actually wrote a series, a collection of short stories with that same title. And I don't know that there is one answer, because otherwise, if there was one answer, if it was less complicated, there would be no pleasure in the search. We never get the answer. We maybe only get a glimpse of part of the answer at the end of our life. And so again, echoing the themes and the structure of this unfinished opera, which is interesting too, because Puccini died before he could resolve. You know, he didn't get the answer. He couldn't answer the questions. And some people choose to use an ending that was written after. I mean, obviously he wrote that Nessun Dorma, the book of the opera, but he didn't have a simple answer for it. And so in this staging of Ai Weiwei's, it's, you leave that open for the audience to understand. It isn't given the final answer that's been written after Puccini's death. It's for so many questions. I mean, I thought it was interesting. And then it just became more interwoven, even with the cast and the conductor being Ukrainian and others. There were just so many webs of connection that were interesting. I was really interested to learn of the choreographer's, Cheng Qing's, friendship with Ai Weiwei. That spans decades. She knew Ai Weiwei's father, Ai Qing, and Ai Weiwei himself had a small role, but performing in a New York production of Turandot, I think that was in the 90s?
Well, it wasn't a small production. It was Zeffirelli's
No,
Turandot.
But I just mean Ai Weiwei's role. I mean, because Ai Weiwei, in case you think, I didn't know Ai Weiwei was an opera singer, I just wanted to say. But he had a role in a well-known production of Turandot, I think in the 90s. So they have this deep...
1987.
87, I wasn't sure, yeah.
He was the executioner. He was cutting heads.
Yes. So very fascinating, because he says at the beginning that he doesn't have a lot of connection to music or opera. You know, he works in other mediums. But for him to have this long connection to the material and the choreographer is really fascinating. Before we go further, just tell us your own connection and your family's connection to the Rome Opera House.
Yeah, so, I mean, the reason actually why I wanted to do a documentary basically started like a little bit more than 100 years ago, because my great-grandfather, he became in 1922 the first violinist of the Rome Opera House, of the orchestra of the Rome Opera House. And then I started in 2015 as a videographer for the Rome Opera House. And basically, well, of course, I did film school and everything, and I always wanted to do a feature length movie. So I started there, but of course I knew I didn't want to stay there like forever. But that place, of course, was really deep inside my family, because then my mother also, she became a ballet soloist of the Rome Opera House. And so I felt really linked. And every time I was like in front of the orchestra pit and I was looking at the empty orchestra pit, I was like almost hypnotized, because I said, it's incredible that 100 years ago, my great-grandfather was sitting there, and now I'm here with the camera filming. That make me question, you know, it's just by chance, or is it destiny? Everything is written, I should be here. I don't know, it just made me trigger some interesting questions. So I said, okay, if I have to leave from this place, I want to leave with something that is really important for me. And so I decided, okay, I want to do a documentary, but I didn't want to do a documentary about the Rome Opera House in general, about the lives that are inside of the Rome Opera House, and about how many people work hard behind like a two-hour show that the people sitting, they just don't realize how many lives are coming together to bring you on stage, basically just an emotion or just a message. So, and this is one of the questions I had in my mind. So this was my main connection with the Rome Opera House. And then I found another great connection with Ai Weiwei when I went to him talking about the project. I wanted to do this documentary. I knew him as an artist, and I know that his art is never just for the art himself. He always is searching for a message, or even for an impact on society. I was a bit anxious, nervous when I went to talk with him, because he's one of the greatest artists of all times. And I went to him and I tried to be as humble as possible. And I said, I want to do this documentary. So I told him about my family. And then, of course, I told him how much I believe in what he's fighting for, because in a certain way, my family had to go through similar issues, because my father, he was the first ballet dancer of the Bolshoi Ballet. And of course, back when he was a dancer, he was in Soviet Union. So in 1982, basically, together with my mother, he escaped from Russia. And because they wouldn't allow him to be together with my mother, because they didn't want a Russian ballet dancer to be together with any other person from any other country. So, and because of this, of course, he didn't feel free, and they were threatened. So my father had to escape in 1982, and then smoothly, then of course, things a little bit changed and improved. And so I told him about this, and I feel like this probably connected me with him a little bit. And he said, yes, okay, yes, you can start shooting. So that's my link with the Rome Opera House, and that's my link with Ai Weiwei.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting, because you both have this connection to the artistic lineage, of course, of your father and your parents, and carrying that on, and the making art in exile. And we know that I Ching, Ai Weiwei's father, was imprisoned and was just a leading poet, and then had to be cleaning. It was just a very long, hard story. And then, of course, Ai Weiwei, I think, following the Sichuan earthquake and his art in response to that, was then detained for a period of a few months, and, you know, just scrutinized, and of course being in exile, his studio destroyed, and all these things that makes the making of art really difficult. And then to overcome that and to be such a vocal opponent to injustice in the world is something that really tests you. This is what's captured beautifully: the collective creative spirit, the political significance of Turandot updated for today's crises. I think in your documentary, you just capture this. And the pacing is so interesting. Nothing is rushed. It's full of so many things, but you even slow down certain takes so that we can really take it in, that creative process. I just thought that was beautifully done. And then, because as Ai Weiwei says, he doesn't have this deep connection to opera or music generally, but I thought he and the team, because they're all interpreting what he's saying, from the costume designers and, of course, the musicians, and everyone is kind of translating his ideas into a different medium, and he's drawing upon their expertise. But he added nice touches, I thought, like someone coming as an outsider from the world of opera, like the addition of bringing in a Chinese opera actor to portray the inner feelings. So that it's a dance, you know, it's for those who see the film or who saw the opera, it's more physical, it's more choreographed than some of the singers who are just more static. It comes to their voice. But this, with the Chinese opera actor, he's bringing in this element of dance that's really interesting. And the costumes are beautiful and the stage design is so impacting. I don't know how everyone managed to go around this stage, which brings in this kind of global perspective of countries and symbolism of oligarchs and refugees, those without power. And then I'm thinking of the singers who have to navigate this, like that's complex. So that's another kind of dance, just to make sure they don't fall into the gaps in this complicated staging. So I just think it was so beautifully done.
Yeah, the interesting thing that he added that this character, Chinese traditional dancer, and because he wanted, since the singers are impersonating the characters, they can give their message through their singing, their voice. So he said they don't need to move because they sing. They have already their message. So he decided that all the singers, they wouldn't like do big moves or going around all the stage. No, they just have their own space based on where they will be on stage. It will have a different interpretation because, as you said, it's a world map and the holes. And there is this hierarchy. So who is on top? It has the highest power. Who is like in the holes below is the forgotten ones, so the refugees and all these people. So he added this character that shows the inner feelings of the characters, of the singers. So if Turandot is angry and everything, he will, of course, dance and move in a certain way. And when Liu dies, he will move again in another way, so to reflect the inner feelings of the characters and the stage, because as you said at the beginning, Turandot, it's set in China, but he thought that the values that were in Turandot's story, they are universal. So we are still living today in many countries, basically almost in the same situation where we have dictators censoring almost a lot of things. And he said, okay, I don't want to be just China. I want it to be the whole world because it involves the whole world, what's Turandot about. And of course, I couldn't show everything that was inside the opera, but if you are careful enough to watch every shot and everything, of course, the fortunate ones that could watch it live, you will see that inside of the opera, through the stage, through the costumes, through the lights, through the videos projection, basically, you almost see all of his artworks until, of course, 2020. So it's like a big mashup of Ai Weiwei's art. And I feel my interpretation is also that it's living because it involves people. And of course, the art that he did until that time, they were beautiful, but installation. So they are there. They don't move. They don't breathe. And it's nice how the people that are part of the stage, they become art themselves.
Yeah, and there's video projections and it really makes it impactful and up to date, showing that different power struggle. I think that now would be a good time to listen to a little the music. So next we'll hear Popolo di Pechino from Turandot, conductor Oksana Liniv.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's how the opera starts. And to me, it was very clear since the beginning, I have to start with this because it sets the rules of the game. So there is the Mandarin who says to the people of Beijing, these are the rules. Who wants to marry the princess has to solve the three riddles, basically. And I started just with this because you have to set the mood, like from the official voice of Beijing. And with that, as I said before, we use Turandot as a metaphor of Ai Weiwei's life. So after that, we have the sequence. Now that we have understood what's Turandot about, we now have to understand who is Ai Weiwei and his rules. And so we start to present Ai Weiwei as a character. First, from the media point of view. So Ai Weiwei, one of the greatest artists in the world, and he's a political activist and in his beliefs. And then we stop a little bit, we slow down with the rhythm, and we try to understand him more from a more intimate point of view. And that's where and when Chin Chan comes in the documentary, because she's the only one that can talk for him and about him from both an artistic but also intimate point of view, because not only she knows him very well as an artist, but she knows him since he was like years old. So she saw him growing up, and she helped him when he was in New York. And because in New York, she was a dancer and performer and choreographer. And Ai Weiwei did for her some of the sets. So they helped each other. And that piece of aria of the beginning of Turandot, we used it as something that just sets the rules. And from there, we try to understand, okay, the world that we will now go through.
And then it slowly develops and we uncover the deeper significance of even the threads of Calaf saying, you've asked me these riddles, now guess my name. And then that's been important, the naming of, we talked a little bit about the Sichuan earthquake, which, you know, Ai Weiwei did this very impactful installation. I guess it was outside the museum in Munich, but it was of the rucksacks of children, who I think 5,000 children died in that, and 90,000 deaths. I mean, it was so significant, you know, because these buildings just collapsed and the government were not naming. We were kind of covering up, you know, the culpability for these unsafe buildings, because some buildings survived, government buildings survived. So the naming and the honoring is significant. That's one of Ai Weiwei's most significant works. So those are some of the interesting layers and echoes that you hear and that I think give the opera an added contemporary relevance. So with that in mind, next we'll hear Dimmi il mio nome. And maybe you'd like to set it up before I play it, just to give a bit of background.
Okay. Yeah, this is the moment where basically Calaf, the main character, solves the three riddles. And so metaphorically, he wins Turandot. So he now can marry Turandot. But he gives to her one chance. And he says, okay, if you don't want to marry me, you can still kill me. But by sunrise, you have to tell me my name. And he knows that the only person that knows his name, it's Liu. So no one will tell to the princess, to Turandot, his name. So it's almost like a checkmate, basically. And that moment, it's the moment of the checkmate to Turandot. So he wins Turandot.
Thank you.
So that's what's happening in the story of Turandot, of the opera. But I used it in a specific moment of the documentary because it's basically layered on three different levels. So we follow all together the story of Turandot. There is the princess that says that who wants to marry me has to face the three riddles. Who will solve the three riddles will marry me. And of course, she kills everyone because no one can solve it. Then we have the story of Ai Weiwei. We have to understand who is Ai Weiwei, why is he doing his art, and why he is so important. So we start to discover, so who is Turandot, who is Ai Weiwei? And then there is the last layer that follows our production. So even the documentary production, because we all had to go through basically almost the very similar steps. We used the story of Turandot as a metaphor of Ai Weiwei's life, because we have Calaf, who is an exiled, just like him. And just like him, he fights against tyranny. And of course, against the Chinese dictatorship. And then we all had to face our own big challenge. So that moment, just when Calaf solves the three riddles, is exactly the moment when Calaf has his challenge, and the challenge is the three riddles. Ai Weiwei challenge is to manage to go through his imprisonment of 81 days. And he manages because his art and his ideology of freedom of speech and everything involves so many people around the world that basically got bigger than him, and the Chinese government couldn't just make him disappear, because otherwise they would admit that they were not a free country, like they say. Together, we all, the production, and yet even the documentary production, we all had to face our challenge, that was COVID. And COVID, even if it's not a political enemy, it tried to shut down the arts, to shut down life in general. You know, we couldn't move, we couldn't express, we couldn't share. And how did we do that? Through art, because like in Italy, the lockdown was very heavy. At some point, we became the first country in the world to have the virus. So we, and people remembers that we got through the pandemic only because, and during the lockdown, only because we could watch movies, read books. People started again to paint. Some other people took their guitars and started to play. You can see that in moment of difficulties, arts arrives and saves you, because you need to express, you need to communicate, you need to communicate. And so then there is this moment of the opera where Calaf says, okay, I won, but now you have to solve one riddle. And at the end of the aria, it's the first time and last that you start hearing the theme, the musical theme of the Nessun Dorma, which is, of course, probably the most famous piece of music ever written. And it became then like a hymn of hope, basically. And so it's almost after this darkness, you start to see the light, luckily in 2022, where the production and all the artists come back on stage. And of course, everything changes completely the flavor. You know, once it has been taken, what you really care about and what you took for granted, when you have it back, then you know how much is important what you are doing. So 2022, when we came back, it was a very special moment for everyone.
Yeah, and at the same time, something ends, something else begins. And so when you start again, February 22nd, 2022, there was also the start of the war in Ukraine, as I understand, yes, right before the premiere. Yes. So then you brought in a Ukrainian conductor, Oksana Liniv, and So how did that, the opera and your creative team approach capturing that stark juxtaposition between Puccini's score, which she brings to life, this real world crisis that's just developing, and that sense of hope, but a sense of like, we're still not out of the war in Ukraine?
Of course, it wasn't planned at all. She came into the production. That's just how opera production works. So of course, the first conductor, Alejo Pérez, those conductors and directors, they are all very busy. Schedules change. After that of dates, he said he wouldn't be able anymore. They found another incredible director who was Oksana Liniv. And so she arrived and she started rehearsing. And I think like 5 days before the premiere, it wasn't many days before the news of the Ukrainian war. So everyone was a little bit in shock. And again, there was a moment where we didn't know if we would bring on stage this opera. It was almost like a nightmare, because when COVID arrived, after the announcement of the theater that had to shut down and everything, I called my producer, Marco Zaccaron, and I said, listen, we have now two options. Or this event will just destroy the whole project and that's it. And we shot, but we won't do anything with this footage. Or this is probably our most incredible opportunity to say how art is important, because I didn't know back then. While you are filming, what you are trying always to capture is, you're always trying to capture a challenge. In that moment, I knew that, of course, COVID would bring maybe that challenge and probably answer to my questions.
My name is Eliza Disbro, and I'm an international studies major with an emphasis in European studies at the University of Washington. The seminal, unfinished operatic classic Turandot from Giacomo Puccini has stood the test of time and is considered a flawed masterpiece by many. Directors and writers have tried their hands at adapting the work, but the renowned artist Ai Weiwei saw the opera as more than just an opportunity to emphasize the relevance and vitality of the original piece. Here, and as seen in the documentary, we see the process undertaken by Weiwei to reflect his own life in Turandot, one filled with art that denounces authority and champions human rights and freedom of expression within China and globally. The fictional, westernized China that the original Turandot is set in shifts under Weiwei's adept hand to a dystopia full of riot gear, hazmat suits, refugee camps, and CCTV cameras. The opulence is gone, and is replaced with a stark reflection of modern-day life and fears. Of course, this is far more than a decision made for aesthetics alone. After all, as Ai Weiwei has stated, everything is art, everything is politics. Of course, this has been the ethos of Weiwei's life's work, and how could it not be? From the time his poet father was exiled under the tyranny of Mao, to his own imprisonment for 81 days as a form of state-sanctioned disappearance in 2011, his life has been intertwined with politics and activism. As such, his activism and critique of the Chinese Communist Party's relentless surveillance and censorship are central to his art, such as the iconic sunflower seeds, with each hand-painted ceramic seed representing the people of China and their collective power to rise up against Chairman Mao and the government. Another one of his most beautiful and haunting pieces is that of Remembering, a memorial of children's names lost in the Sichuan earthquake due to faulty construction and a corrupt government. These names were stolen from the victims to obscure the devastation and cruelty. However, we see the inverse with the character Turandot. She goes from being a cruel princess, fulfilling her purpose in the narrative as the villain, to a greater representation of cruelty as a concept. Such a decision to alter the titular character is emblematic of Ai Weiwei's radical staging of Puccini's Turandot, and remains core to the documentary. We come face to face with the ghost of the opera's Orientalism and the crises it seeks to illuminate, including the COVID-19 pandemic and the anguish of Ukrainian conductor Oksana Liniv and soprano Oksana Dika as their homeland is ravaged by war. The process itself becomes a microcosm of global catastrophes, with many impossible to name. Ai Weiwei carries this uncertainty and fear into the opera, choosing to discard the reassuring ending written by Franco Alfano, leaving Puccini's work in its original, unfinished state. There is no bow on the box that is politics. There has been no end to fear, cruelty, and oppression, and the decision to end on a powerful, unresolved note is just as much a political decision as everything else has been. the silence, the discomfort, it is all a call to action that the audience themselves now has to name and face within and around themselves. And now, back to the interview.
So I just want to say, and also it should be mentioned that the soprano, who is Turandot herself, is Ukrainian soprano, Oksana Dika.
Ukraine, yes, yes.
And so it just makes you reflect, because you're thinking about she's an embodiment of a kind of totalitarianism and oppression. I know that's not the commentary on Ukraine, but it just brings echoes into the mix, oppression and political fear.
Yeah, the difference with the Ukraine, with the COVID, is that the Ukrainian war happened just one day after another. And COVID, actually, this new virus, it's happening slowly, the country's shutting down and everything. So I'm not saying we were prepared, but psychologically, there was something already moving. And the war happened just like this. And it was incredible, because I did also the interview to Oksana Dika, but she told me that her brother, that after a couple of days had to go, they gave him like gun, and because he was in that age and he had to go to war, and she was very scared. It was very interesting, because I asked Oksana Linif, the conductor, how did she feel to be there in that moment, and if she thought that art was important to do it in that moment. And she truly believed that art was important. She would not go away from the production, because she wanted to show how being present in the moment and with her beautiful blue and yellow belt, to show how important art, especially that kind of production, to have a space in the world. So she wanted to be present and to show how it's important to not to shut down, but to keep playing and trying to give the message to the people. At the other side, there was Oksana Dika, that she completely almost lost all of her feelings, and she almost didn't believe anymore in art. She said that she doesn't feel anything when she sings, which probably it's why... Also, maybe she did an incredible interpretation, because Turandot doesn't feel anything. She's a very cold princess. She doesn't care about anything. And this, when you see her close-ups with her eyes open and everything, probably it goes through, you feel it. But it was interesting to witness these two different approach to the same thing happening. And of course, what Ai Weiwei did, he tried to bring this inside of the opera, because art had to reflect also what is outside and try to show it to you in a different language, in a different way. So, and that's the only way that art can be always contemporary. If the art is like fed from the reality outside. And that's what I think he did.
Yeah, I think so. It's not a museum of dead ideas. It's life itself, you know. It's a celebration of beauty and curiosity and all these things, not just an archive. And so I think that that really is interesting. Turandot does become, she's this cold princess who then is ultimately in the resolution that we've mostly seen, but you kind of keep it open-ended. You use the Puccini's unfinished version, but is melted by love, is melted by the kiss of Calaf, and she's almost like god of war seen in this context. Remorseless, if you can answer the question, if you can defeat this, then you can live. It's kind of the same thing that you face in war, and that's how it impacted me, you know, seeing this interpretation. So it's fascinating to know their inner struggles that they were going through at the time of creation. And that's the thing that you can do in documentaries, because we in the audience, we see the finished beautiful project, but we don't really get to see all the different things that you get in rehearsals. I always love going behind the scenes and obviously getting to know the creative process. We should perhaps play another. Maybe let's listen. So I just love all these threads, intentional and unintentional. And that's what I love, is when a work of art is moving and beautiful, which is one of the greatest operas. And then it also makes you think, also makes you remember. And then it triggers this other engagement of this activism and say, okay, maybe you're not a big activist, but this touches you too. So how can you take action in your own small or large way? And that's, I think, what your film does, what the opera does is like, I'm always asking students, we're given one life, what we can do with the life we're given. So art is one way to appreciate its beauty, but also if it can inspire us to take action. And I think that's what you've done beautifully with your film and Ai Weiwei does with his work as well. I want to play, of course, we should play Nessun Dorma. I mean, we all know it, but set it up for us before I play.
Yeah, I think it doesn't need any big presentation, but it's the most Aryan of all times. The most moving one, and it has so many meanings inside. So it's an incredible piece of music. And for me, it was so important that we would hear that aria only at the end, because I feel like you cannot continue after that kind of piece of music. It's impossible. And in the story of Turandot, Nessun Dorma happens basically during the night, because all Turandot starts at sunset and ends at sunrise. So everything happens in one night, and it's the moment just before the sunrise. And this sunrise, of course, is also metaphorical, because the sunset, it's where everything gets very dark and you almost lose hope. It goes through sunrise, so hope is coming. This is also very interesting. I think we start, or maybe I will just say it later after we hear the music. But basically, in the opera, it has that place where Calaf is alone. He knows he will win because no one knows his name. We know that he will win.
It's so beautiful. And what it says is, for those of us who don't speak as a language, we can understand it. We understand the feelings, we get the essence, and it's so universally touching. It also is an ode to, of course, hope, but to resilience, as we've discussed, and also the beauty and wonder of the natural world, because it's about tomorrow is another day that we can see on the horizon. So it connects us to this basic, that essential beauty of nature as well. So as an artist, how do you connect also to the beauty and wonder of the natural world and your memories of that? How does that fuel your process?
Well, I just want to say it's very important. Of course, we had to use music from the opera, but there were some moments in the documentary we hear more electronic, like synthetic music, especially moments that are more intimate or where Puccini's music was a bit too big because so I needed a small sound. And I talked with the composer and I said, I want to be always in Puccini's world. So I would like you to take the Nessun Dorma aria and use the exact same notes, but with different balances. So since the beginning, all the music that you hear, you always hear Puccini's notes. Even it just the balance is different. And of course, the arrangement, so the sound and everything. And while we were doing this process, I think for me, it was really incredible. We noticed one thing that the aria of Nessun Dorma, it has two parts. One part, the theme, it's dark. The second part, it's so positive. So there is like light moments of the documentary. Like, of course, when the earthquake, we use the dark part. When Ching Chang is talking about a Wei Wei, how they met and their relation, we use the positive one. To me, it was really important. You know, you cannot compete with Puccini. And once you have to do something with that kind of music, you just have to step back. So with the together with the composer, we thought, okay, we will do the same exact music, but rearrange it. And then we found these two themes inside of the same piece. So the audience never leaves Puccini since the beginning. And I think it's very beautiful.
Yeah, you're talking about the light and the dark, the night and the dawn. So in another way, while it's a celebration of beauty and resilience and struggle, it's also a celebration of the beauty and wonder of the natural world that we can all connect with, even if we don't speak the language. We just get the feeling of it. It just rekindles this most basic and immediate response, and we can feel the dawn coming.
Yeah, so to me, of course, nature, it's very important. And I don't know if you remember, but during the lockdown, nature like almost overcame into cities. There was this incredible thing in Venice, all the canals, you could see the bottom because the boats weren't going like they used to. It was incredible to see how just in 2 or 3 months, the world changed completely from the sound of the cities to the air and the water. That was, for me, incredible. I think for me, in general, nature is important. I mean, mm-hmm. Of course, in this documentary, I didn't work on that. So I don't know how it can be linked together with the documentary, but you know, that's the beauty of art. If you feel it and you have that kind of interpretation, then it's right, because the message that wants to arrive to the other people, and that person takes it and re-elaborates it in another way, it's correct. That's the power of art.
Yes. And then you spoke at the beginning about those important questions. What is art and why do we need art? And then we see around the world, we have a real shakeup in our education system now. And we see that the arts are kind of set aside, not seen as important, not contributing an economic value. You know, the work of artists being scraped by AI with no compensation. There's so many ways in which art is set aside as something not essential, but I agree with you. I think it is essential. So what makes art essential and important? What is the importance of the arts and the humanities for you? And how has it inspired your own work? And how does it enrich your life every day?
Yeah, so for me, when I started this documentary, I had this question. And after COVID arrived, for me, it was very clear. And I wanted to show you, because when everything was taken away, people just got mad. I mean, you truly get crazy without the possibility of expressing. You don't have to be like incredible, great artist. Even the people that started painting during the lockdown just because they had fun, that's art too, because it's expression. I mean, there were people like singing on their balconies or playing music in the afternoons. I saw it with my eyes that it was a physical need, even when there wasn't a possibility or places where art could be put, because of course museums were closed, theaters were closed, cinemas closed, everything was closed. So naturally, people find a way to keep doing it. And that means it is inside of our nature, it's inside of our needs just as much eating. You can survive, I don't know, a couple of days if you don't listen to any kind of music, read any kind of books, see any kind of paintings or sculpture or anything. You go crazy.
Yes, and it's not even just a human impulse. It's in our nature, but it's also in animals. I don't know if you've seen, there's some musicians that they perform to all kinds of animals. And you see horses and birds, but even the tortoise, who's so slow, or the elephant, it's slow. And the guy plays his guitar and they all, a whole herd comes up and they just want to know, what is this sound coming out of this magic guitar? And they're so curious, and all of their fear, because animals fear us normally, they don't usually come close to us like that. And they're coming up and, you know, trying to crawl into the guitar to find out, where is this miracle coming from? I think that that's a beautiful way that music in particular connects all life.
Yeah.
This frequency that we can all tune into, and we must never close our ears to it. And so in closing, as you think about the future, as you think about the kind of world we're leaving the next generation, as you think about those things that you've learned have been passed on to you by your artistic family along the way, what would you like young people to know, preserve, and remember?
Well, I always try to, I don't like to give quotes like keys to read the life, but I was thinking, especially in those days, well, we are surrounded by war, and politicians that, I mean, they're just going mad. And what I saw in Italy, but of course also in the US, it's the amount of money that now are being spent on armies and guns and all of this, but like billions of billions of billions, hundreds of billions. And I started to think, you know, what will happen if you spend the same exact money, not only on culture, but schools and all of these things, and you just completely, I know that's a utopia, an utopic thinking, but what if you just don't have any armies anymore and you just put all of this energy into forming new people in and giving them the instruments to see life, of course, in a certain way. I don't think that war will ever end. I mean, it's part of the nature, unfortunately, of the human being. But I feel like if we do something like this, probably people will start fighting, you know, composing the best music, writing the best book. And I feel this would be something incredible to challenge or to fight, or to show supremacy, let's put it in this way, based on the cultural level of the country or something like that. I don't know. I feel that this is actually possible. I don't think it's just madness or something crazy that came to my mind. But yeah, if the same amount of money would be invested in culture and all of these things, then the whole world would completely change, because people would have the instrument to understand the world that you have around, and they will start to also to understand what is respect. They wouldn't be ignorant anymore.
Yeah, it's so true. I think supporting creation instead of destruction, that's what it's really about. So, the important words. Thank you, Maxime Derevyanko, for sharing your creative process and exploring the important questions. What is art? What is freedom? What is love? And in the face of mass suffering and fear, why do we need art? Thank you for bringing this important story to the screen and adding your voice to the creative process. Yes.
Thank you very much for having me and giving me the opportunity to tell my story.
The Creative Process Podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation. This interview was conducted by Mia Funk with the participation of collaborating universities and students. Associate interviews producers on this episode were Eliza Disbrow and Sophie Garnier. The Creative Process is produced by Mia Funk. Additional production support by Katie Foster. The music on this episode was Popolo di Pechino, Dimmi il mio nome, and Nessun Dorma from Ai Weiwei's Turandot at the Rome Opera House, conducted by Oksana Liniv. Music is courtesy of Maxime Derevyanko. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. If you'd like to get involved with our creative community, exhibitions, podcasts, or submit your creative works for review, just follow us on Instagram on @creativeprocesspodcast and send us a DM. Thanks for listening.